Mr. We have now reconvened, and it is just short of 2 o'clock. So, Mr. Harris, would you please introduce the item?
So, this item is on pure water, and I'm very pleased to have Paul Schutto, who's the relatively new general manager of the Monterey Regional Water Pollution Control Agency here to give you a presentation. I think this is really, given what you just heard about stormwater, I think you'll see how this project fits in. I think it really is a model project that others will be able to learn from. It's very exciting. It's not only going to help us solve some of our challenging water quality issues in the Monterey area, but it's going to help with the groundwater basin. It's going to provide potable water. And I think it really is a roadmap to the future of how we handle our water resources. So without anything else, I'll turn it over to Paul.
Thank you, Ken. Mr. Chair, members of the board, as Ken mentioned, my name is Paul Schutto. I'm the general manager of Monterey Regional Water Pollution Control Agency. He's absolutely right. It's relatively recent. I've been there as general manager for about 3 months. So thank you for this opportunity to update you on our Pure Water Monterey project. As you see before you, we say welcome to the future of water. The reason for that is it is an indirect potable reuse project, which is not unusual. Certainly Orange County is doing that. West Basin down in Southern California has been doing it since 1995. What's unusual about our particular project, and to our knowledge is the only one of its kind, is the number of source waters being used for reuse. And we'll get into that as the presentation continues. So just as a brief overview of the project, where it's located and where the benefits are, the red rectangle in the middle is our existing wastewater treatment plant, primary secondary plant. The little hashed area below it represents where the advanced water treatment plant will be constructed, and the identification of source waters will contribute water sources to both agricultural irrigation to the north there, which is existing, we'll just be able to provide more water to that location, and then to the southwest, the groundwater recharge area. So that's where the advanced treated water will be used for groundwater injection and then extraction through potable wells by the investor-owned utility Cal American. So as I mentioned, the unique part from our perspective on the project are the varying source waters. Typical indirect potable reuse projects utilize wastewater, and that's about it. In our particular circumstance, we started trying to look for additional unused resources, and to that extent, urban stormwater runoff. Generally speaking, as you well know, it flows away, is not reused in a beneficial sense. We are looking at various areas, certainly with our partners within the city of Salinas. We've entered negotiations with the city of Monterey to try to capture some of that stormwater and treat it and have it reused for our both irrigation as well as potable purposes, excuse me. The Salinas agricultural wash water. So we've all gone to the store and purchased those bags of pre-washed lettuce, the little romaine heads, and that process, which was pretty much invented in Salinas, contributes about 4 million gallons a day of wastewater. Now, the growers do a great job in utilizing that water. They actually reuse it 3 to 4 times prior to it being discharged. Historically, it's been discharged to some ponds in Salinas and allowed to percolate and evaporate. We'll get to a slide later in terms of the proximity of some of those, the infrastructure, the pipelines, to PCA's pump station, but there was an opportunity there to see this as a resource of 4 million gallons a day and bring it into our plant. From a pilot perspective, we actually started doing that last year and was able to recycle close to 1 billion gallons worth of water last year that went all out to irrigation in the Castroville area, and we're currently doing it this year. So as part of the overall project, this is one of those 4 sources we're looking at. Certainly, like other indirect potable reuse projects, excess secondary treated wastewater. As you well know, our treatment plant since 1998 does have a tertiary plant, where the treated secondary is further treated and then provided to the Castroville area as part of the Castroville Seawater Intrusion Project. So that water is certainly being utilized to its maximum extent. What we're looking at here is some of the winter wastewater, which as of today continues to be discharged through our outfall into the National Marine Sanctuary. By having the Advanced Water Treatment Plant, the Pure Water Monterey Project, we'll be able to utilize a portion of those flows. The final source that we're all looking at is also agricultural drainage water. Off the ag land, through the tile drains and so on, there's a number of drains out in the Salinas Valley. We're looking specifically at Blanco Drain and the Reclamation Ditch, which Tembladero Slough also flows to, and building infrastructure to be able to transfer water from those drains to our pump stations and to our treatment plant. So that in conjunction together will provide the water for this project. I mentioned the infrastructure, and certainly we would love to take credit for exceptional engineering design way back when, but it's probably pure luck that all the infrastructure happens to be in one specific area. The green rectangle is our Salinas pump station. So the green lines represent wastewater, I mean pure sewer wastewater, coming into the plant, being pumped to our treatment plant in Marina. The red line represents that agricultural wash water lines that were conveying water from Salinas to those industrial ponds. Obviously, the close proximity of that existing infrastructure makes it relatively simple to make some modifications and have a permanent junction structure which will allow the water to flow into the pump station. The blue lines are actually stormwater lines for the city of Salinas, and we are working with them, and actually it's been great to work with them in trying to do the projects necessary to have the water transferred, as well as the contractual relationships that you have to have in these sort of instances. So our regional treatment plant will be somewhat unique in that we will be treating to three different qualities of water that will be coming out of the plant. So not necessarily in order, but certainly our secondary treated water goes through our existing tertiary plant, which is a filter, anthracite, sand, and gravel filters, and is provided to that CSIP area, those 12,000 acres for agricultural irrigation. So that's one quality of water that we are treating to. Second, certainly, is treated secondary, which is discharged through our ocean outfall to the bay. Predominantly in wintertime, as it's noted here, because we try to recycle as much as we can, preferably 100% for agricultural irrigation in the summer months, or more than just the summer months, but the agricultural growing period. And when the Pure Water Monterey project comes online, there'll be a third quality of water that's put out by the plant, and that's an advanced treated, highly pure water that will be used for groundwater injection for potable reuse. The picture you have here is actually, we just had a demonstration facility completed, had our first tour with California Special Districts Association this last Monday, and we would certainly like to extend invitations to Ken and whoever else to come in for a tour to see the facility, what we're doing, and how it's working. It's a great demonstration facility for outreach, not only to our regulators and legislators, but the public, to convey the safety of this process and how it's going to interact with the overall water solution for the peninsula. This just represents the types of effluent and, frankly, a visible color difference in that effluent through the treatment processes. So certainly to the right there is the secondary effluent, which is typically being discharged to the bay. Our treatment process is a four-step process. This represents three of those steps, the first being ozonation, membrane, and then RO. And you can see how it gets clearer and more pure as we go along the treatment process. Just real quick to run over the treatment side of things. This is a schematic of the overall treatment plant as well as the proposed advanced water treatment plant. So we do have a standard secondary treated plant, which You can see through the many confusing lines there, the secondary can go to the ocean outfall. It can go up, and I guess you can't see it up there, but to the existing tertiary plant reused for irrigation. And then the lower part of the schematic shows the multiple-step process of the advanced water treatment plant and ultimately putting the water into the seaside basin. To a little more detail on that, first step is ozone. So the secondary treated water comes into our plant, is treated with ozone. Next step is it goes through a membrane filtration. So very fine membrane, certainly not to the reverse osmosis level, to get out most of the constituents. Next, we do go through a reverse osmosis process, similar to other plants in the state and the country. If I'm not mistaken, it filters down to 0.001 microns, so to a very small level. And finally, we do go through an advanced oxidation and UV disinfection at the back end of the plant. At this point, it will be, once again, highly pure water. If and when you can come to our demonstration facility, we'll have the opportunity, if you so choose, to drink the product water. We'll have it in this form, but we'll also stabilize it, because when you take everything out of water, it does taste a little funny, as you can imagine. So we'll stabilize it by adding some calcium back into it to give it a more standard flavor, if you will. So this just shows that purification process all in series. And when you go to the demonstration facility, that's certainly how it's laid out, is in a flow schematic like this. So now we have pure water at the end of our treatment plant. So what are we going to do with it? There'll be a pump station at the plant. And once again, I apologize for not having the pointer up there, but there's a blue line sort of to the left coming from the orange rectangle down to the injection facilities. And that is a proposed pipeline alignment to pump the water, the pure water, from the treatment plant to the seaside basin, where we will have injection wells, which will inject the water into the aquifer. So about the injection, so we've been drilling monitoring wells out there as part of the design and planning processes, and ultimately we will have injection wells going into the Santa Margarita aquifer in the seaside basin. Now, as you well know, with an indirect potable reuse regs, there needs to be an environmental buffer from when we produce the water to when it is actually served to the public. So a groundwater model shows that at least 6 months will occur between when we pump it in to when it's extracted. Frankly, it'll be more like a year to provide that environmental buffer and, frankly, more treatment. This is just showing back when we submitted to CDPH before it became DDW as part of the State Water Resources Control Board, that CDPH did review and approved of the project concept and the facility's descriptions and so on. Certainly a big point of our outreach is how safe this process is and the number of layers of regulation, testing, monitoring, and so on that we are going through to ensure that it is safe. As we mentioned, this is happening throughout the state. This process, this type of project, we go through State Water Resources Control Board, Division of Drinking Water. We're meeting the regulations. In addition, we did convene an independent advisory panel to sort of have that third-party oversight. And this is a picture from, if I'm not mistaken, from last year, and with our advisory panel, as well as members of this board, Harvey and company. And so there are multiple levels of oversight to ensure that what we're producing is a safe, potable source that will be injected into a potable drinking water basin. One of the milestones of the project, as we are moving towards hopefully getting to the design phase, is the environmental work. Our team and staff have done a phenomenal job in putting together what we see at this point is a very unique EIR and it is due to be certified at a special board meeting of the agency on October 8th. So at that point in time, we will have a certified EIR and be moving forward, hopefully, with the project. If I can leave you with one thing, it's that this project is a replacement water supply. So we all know the issues on the peninsula in terms of water supply. This is certainly offering a resilient water supply moving into the future. From an environmental standpoint, utilizing far less energy than other treatment processes, as well as having the environmental effect of less water going to the bay, less energy being used, and cleaning up some impaired surface waters of the state as well. Not only is it benefiting the peninsula, but we're also found enough source water where we can increase substantially the water that's going for agricultural irrigation to the Castroville Seawater Intrusion Project. So we certainly see this as a multi-region, multi-benefit project. And with that, if you had any questions.
I'll go first, I guess, for a change. How many millions of gallons are we talking about? That will be, I heard of a 4 million a day. That was from the lettuce wash plant. So that's the quantity that you're looking at in injecting into the wells?
So I'm going to change units on you if that's okay. So the plant itself is 3,500 acre-feet per year that we will be injecting into the Seaside Basin. Now, as you hear more about the project, whether it be through the newspapers or other, you may hear 3,700 acre-feet per year. The reason being is there's a 200 acre-foot per year drought reserve, so we're trying to build up a buffer in the Seaside Basin, but generally speaking, 3,500 acre-feet per year.
Thank you very much. Mr. Johnston? No?
I think, oh, excuse me. I thought, Monica, you did have a question you wanted to ask about Castroville, I believe.
I wasn't sure where that was supposed to come in. Thank you for reminding me. I did see the CSIP is tied in as part of the overall design, and that has implications, obviously, for irrigated land. But the Castroville CSD and water service that they provide, I understand that they could, in a surprising way or an unanticipated way, benefit for their own water use. And I wasn't clear how that would occur. Where did that fit into the calculations?
So certainly in reference to this project, we are not anticipating a connection to the Castroville Community Services District in terms of potable water. This project is truly just looking at injecting water into the Seaside Basin for peninsula users and then providing approximately another 4,700 acre-feet plus or minus for agricultural irrigation, so not potable water up there. I know there have been some discussions from a preliminary nature on if and when a desal project comes online, okay, that there may be an opportunity to provide water to the Castroville General Improvement District there.
Oh, I see. Okay, so
different.
The Castroville Seawater Intrusion Program is providing water for irrigated lands, and the name Castroville just happens to be involved in that, but it's not really directed at drinking water uses.
No, it's not.
Is there expansions of this in future iterations that maybe aren't just conceptually kind of in the picture right now, because so many of those little coastal areas that are embedded within the ag area along the coast there where seawater intrusion is occurring and could, with drought conditions exacerbated, continue to see their well supplies dropping. Being factored in at some stage?
So, first of all, thank you for saying conceptual in terms of expansion, as we're in the middle of our EIR process.
Yeah.
But from a conceptual basis, yes, this treatment plant could be scalable in terms of adding additional treatment trains to in the future increase capacity. As I mentioned, in the wintertime, when we have round numbers, 20 million gallons a day of wastewater flows that aren't being utilized for irrigation, we'll only use about 4 million gallons a day for this treatment plant. So we still have a fair amount of flow going out to the bay. If at some point in the future we had more treatment capacity, we could utilize those resources.
Okay, that helps. Thank you.
I find this project so exciting that that question, if you think about if they had the capacity and they could pay for it, of course there's always a cost of paying for it.
Right.
What they could do in terms of the groundwater basins, seawater intrusions. I mean, I don't know, Paul, if you've ever just done the numbers. I mean, you know, what percentage of this area's potable water supply could you provide if you had the money and the resources to build a treatment plant? I mean, it has tremendous, tremendous potential.
Yeah, and that's the picture that I had. I attended the drought panel that was sponsored by the California Public Policy Institute, and in looking at the regional infrastructure, it's not what it could be, given that we all know regionalization is critical, you know, and so hard infrastructure being what it is. But there is proximity, and there is more collaboration, and so it just seems to me the inevitable that the local leadership, both business and governance, would be talking, at least on the margins, you know, what's the maximum potential for resolving water supply issues in a coastal region, that is just going to continue to be challenged by seawater intrusion. It's given. So whatever else you want to say.
No, absolutely, and I think there are a number of opportunities in the future. Certainly we've been focused on that 3,500 acre-feet per year because that's what the Project EIR is doing, but we've had a number of meetings with other organizations and other entities, and that question has come up is, can you produce more of the needed potable supply? And, in the future, the answer certainly is yes. I think it comes down to a cost or an economic decision, but the resources are there.
Thank you. Mr. Young?
Thank you. Could you back up your slides to the schematic that shows the different there? So, and maybe I didn't identify it here, but at what point do you pull off the water that's going to be used for ag?
So, I don't know if you can see on this one.
I can.
To the far upper right,
right,
it says to existing tertiary treatment.
Okay.
So the flow goes through the secondary treatment plant.
Right.
And then, if you will, it takes a left-hand turn and goes to our existing tertiary treatment plant, which then goes to the Castroville area for irrigation.
Will it go through the tertiary treatment plant before going to be applied to crops?
Yes, it absolutely does, and has been doing that since 1998. Now, it will not go through the tertiary treatment plant before it goes to the advanced treatment plant. So if we can continue following a molecule of water, if you will, that comes through the secondary plant, it would take a right-hand turn and go through our advanced water treatment. So depending which way it goes is what quality of water we end up with.
So, it was kind of interesting to see the picture of the lettuce and the conveyor system.
Yeah.
I'm interested to know are there any pollutants being transferred from the lettuce into the wash water?
Yes, there is.
And what are they?
So, generally speaking, and I can get you more information on this, but generally speaking, there's some organics, as one would imagine, as you wash something off. But our treatment plant is designed to take care of our organics. There's also a relatively high level of phosphorus because phosphoric acid is used in the cleaning processes of the equipment and the packaging and such at these other plants, which generally speaking is not a problem for a biological treatment plant to take care of. Having said that, from an odor control perspective, we add ferric chloride to address sulfide odors and corrosion. Ferric chloride has an affinity for phosphorus, so what we've noted is that we have to increase our ferric chloride addition substantially to address those additional constituents in the wash water, as well as take care of odors and corrosion and things like that. So it's certainly a learning process for us, but we are sampling the water and we're continuing to take a look at how to optimize those processes.
What organics are
Bits of lettuce, frankly.
Oh, that type of organic.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, sir, you need a speaker card.
Well, all I'm saying is I designed...
Well,
a little more information.
Well, please fill out a speaker card. Well, I'm sorry, I want to follow the rule.
No, that was it. Thank you.
Mayor Delgado?
Yes, the 3,500 acre feet, is that the product of this whole project? It's scalable for the future, but for right now, the EIR produces 3,500 acre feet for groundwater replenishment, et cetera?
Yes.
Or is it just for the groundwater replenishment piece?
That's a great question. So if I can talk round numbers, we've identified new sources meaning the agricultural wash water, storm water, and the agricultural runoff of about, so that 8,700 feet, we need about 4,300 acre feet to go through the advanced water treatment plant to produce that 3,500 acre feet of water. I know this is somewhat convoluted and I apologize. There is a loss when you go through a treatment plant of 19%. The additional 4,400 acre feet of the new source water is what's going out for agricultural irrigation. So we have 3,500 acre feet, as you mentioned, specific to potable reuse, and about 4,400 going for agricultural irrigation.
And then 1,200 gets wasted, disappears?
Wasted.
What happens to that 1,200?
So that goes out with the rest of our wastewater through our outfall and is discharged into the bay.
Okay.
So that would be part of the RO reject water.
Exactly.
Okay. So I asked that to prep for my next question. Of the 3,500 acre feet that is available for potable groundwater replenishment, has there been discussion if any of that is available to repair groundwater losses if there is damage done from the desal that result in, let's say, seawater intrusion or groundwater level dropping, and to make the losers whole where that occurs? Has there been discussion of some of this 3,500 going there instead of to seaside groundwater basin?
There has not been discussions on that. And at this point, the discussions on the 3,500 to follow the economic trail is it costs money to produce that water, and we're working on a water purchase agreement with Cal American to buy that water to put into their system. There has not been discussions for them to buy that water as a replacement for what they're taking out of the Salinas Basin. So it is in different basins also.
Thank you. So I know that there's limits to what you would say at this point about the cost, but I'd like to ask, what's the value per acre foot in dollars of that 3,500 acre feet, approximately, ballpark?
So that is the, I guess it's more than a $64,000 question. Plus or minus, we're looking at about $2,000 an acre foot for that product water. So $7 million. Having said that, we are still refining our economic models to understand, to dial in the O&M costs as well as the capital replacement costs over the 30-year period of the loan to get at that specific dollar per acre foot. But from a ballpark perspective, I think that's something fair to use.
So does that $2,000 figure make the scalable future concept more attractive because the 2,000 ballpark figure is so much less than the ballpark figure being disclosed for desal water acre foot?
Certainly in my mind it does. However, we have a joint application into the CPUC with Cal-Am, and our cost, Pure Water's cost of water, must be between the marginal cost difference between a small desal plant and a large desal plant. So you may have heard the desal plants are, if I'm not mistaken, 6.4 MGD or 9.6 MGD. Well, obviously, there's a marginal cost difference, which is far less than actually producing desal water, between 6.4 and 9.6. And our understanding is, based on the Cal-American economic models, that marginal cost difference is about $1,800 an acre foot. Once again, round numbers. So water that we produce out of this plant needs to compare favorably with that $1,800 an acre foot versus the ultimate cost of desal, if that makes sense.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Johnston?
Just two questions. One, I note on that schematic that it's still up. The bottom left, it says excess secondary effluent used for concentrate dilution when available. Now, what that implies to me is that there are going to be times when there is no excess secondary effluent available. And does that mean that the concentrate is going to go to the ocean outfall without dilution?
Yes, as a short answer.
And so presumably there's a whole set of, if you're sending concentrated brine out an ocean outfall, presumably it's heavier than the ocean water, and there's a whole set of specifications as far as what you have to do to get it mixed and not create toxicity on the seafloor. So I assume all of that is figured into your costs.
Yes. So when available certainly means in the summer months when the wastewater is being reused for agricultural irrigation, we don't have that wastewater going out the outfall. So what we're left with is during those summer months, the advanced water treatment plant is not operating at full capacity because, frankly, there's not the water there. It's operating at a far less capacity. That concentrate does go out our outfall and is distributed through the 121 ports on the side of our outfall, which has been hydraulically modeled under a number of conditions and is represented in the EIR to make sure we're looking at all potential environmental effects of it.
So that will that concentrate be then the only stuff going out that outfall at that point?
In theory, yes. And when I say in theory, I'm sorry, I can't.
So I was just going to say, one, it's 2:30. I know you have to get going, but typically the RO reject water, we try not to call it brine, from the RO plants is not as concentrated as the brine produced from a desal plant.
Yeah.
And do you know what the TDS is going to be?
I don't know what the TDS is. I can get that for you. I know the TDS on a desal plant is like 60,000. And actually, that's one of the issues is using our concentrate to blend with the desal brine to actually reduce the concentration.
Absolutely.
So it's a benefit, if you will.
Okay.
I can tell you the RO reject water from Cambria is somewhere less than 15,000. Ocean water is about 35.
Yeah.
So basically the ocean sees it as fresh water almost. So you don't have the same you're not going to have this, it doesn't come under the desal policy, for example.
Right.
So it's much easier to permit, and I think from an environmental standpoint it's superior to what you're going to deal with in terms of a desal plant.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask a second question about the implications of moving water from the Salinas River Basin to a different basin, some of which that wash water would have percolated down to the down in the Salinas River Basin. But since it's 2:30, I don't think I'll ask it.
There is, but that's a great question. And let me see if I can find the ponds. Which I went the wrong direction. The ponds are adjacent to the Salinas River.
Right.
So when you talk about percolation, we have not done, you can see the ponds is the blue polygon right here, adjacent to the Salinas River. So although we have not done studies to understand what gets to the groundwater aquifer versus what just gets to the river and flows out to the bay, there have been percentages given to increase the amount of water going for agricultural irrigation, thereby increasing what's going to the Salinas Basin versus what's going to the Seaside Basin. So we are trying to address that, but it is not a known number. Frankly, it is an arbitrary factor.
Very good. We have a couple of speaker cards on this topic.
Right, and we'll say thank you and allow him to his meeting.
And I was going to compliment you on your presentation. I thought it was very crisp, to the point, a few slides, but, you get the message across. So I want to thank you very much. And I'm sure my colleagues appreciated also your presentation.
Thank you for the time.
Thank you. So we have a speaker card for Steve Shimek, and I had pre-agreed on 8 minutes for your presentation.
So where would you like me? Do you want me up there or here?
Whichever you prefer.
Do you mind me telling you when to advance? Or is there a clicker here?
Did our speaker leave?
No, I think that was already there.
Okay.
I think that's our bag for the computer.
John, is it easier for me up there? Yeah. While they're getting ready, just to extend my time in a nanosecond, as usual, thank you for your service. I truly understand that you guys are essentially volunteers. And I am grateful for what you do. And I truly mean that.
Oh, good.
Let me know when it's up. I guess I'll see when it's up.
See, we gave you already an extra 1 minute credit here.
I know. All right. So my name is Steve Shimek with the Otter Project in Monterey Coastkeeper. And I want to make it clear that what I'm going to be talking about is that split that goes off to the CSIP project. So this all builds to that split. I have no problem whatsoever with the split in that treatment train that goes to groundwater replenishment, so because that's treated to a very high standard. My comments are about the piece of the water, which is frankly the majority, and I'll show that. That goes to the CSIP for irrigation water. So first of all, just to set the stage, and I'll take a couple minutes to do this, there used to be a lot of water down there. There really used to be a lot of water in the lower Salinas. Now there's people that say, oh, it's always been a perennial stream, and that may be true for the most of the river upstream of Salinas. But, let's talk about the Salinas for a second. This is 1910. You guys have seen this picture before. When you zoom in on that guy, and I didn't bring that picture, but it appears that he's holding a nice bunch of fish and a fishing rod. There used to be 8 lakes that were on the eastern side of the Salinas Valley. And these lakes were significant. Now, I think I'm about to show another slide that maybe is an exaggeration, but you can see that these lakes were fairly large. They were perennial. And when you read documents about it, it actually talks about them being artesian. They just were gushing water. And in fact, some of the old accounts of mariners in Monterey Bay talk about being able to dip fresh water from the ocean right off shore in the Salinas River and Monterey Bay. There used to be a ferry right where Highway 68 Bridge crosses the Salinas River, and that ferry charged, I think it was 25 cents a carriage, that ferry used to transport all goods and services across the Salinas River. I don't think you would need a ferry if the river was dry. There probably were times when the ferry was not needed, but generally that ferry operated and was a going concern for actually a couple of decades. The community of Spreckles, the bricks were barged up the Salinas River to build a town. Again, this kind of attests to the fact that there used to be a lot of water around here. There really did. This is the one that I'm talking about, but that was possibly an exaggeration. This was from a San Francisco newspaper that talks about the fact that instead of using Hetch Hetchy water, which would have to be piped from the Sierra, they could just pipe from Castroville, the Castroville Lakes. And this would be water for the city of San Francisco coming from the Castroville Lakes. Now, certainly it's an exaggeration and an overestimate because I'm not sure I might have clipped it off too early, but they talk about the lakes being 325 feet deep, and that is certainly not the case. That all changed. That all changed through the decades as and it changed rather abruptly. This is the change in cropping. And you see that from 1930 until 2010, by decade there, you can see that the amount of irrigated crops goes way up, way, way, way up. And as you know, there's no service from the California Water Project to the Salinas Valley. This is all groundwater. And that groundwater led to a series of issues. First and foremost was the issue of saltwater intrusion that was actually identified in the early 40s in the lower Salinas Valley. And in fact, it was considered a serious problem. And it led to the predecessor agency of Monterey County Water Resources Agency. I'll just call it the County Water Agency for short. But basically, you don't need to read all this text, but basically, they were given the authority to, one, and it's a fairly unique authority, the water agency was given the authority to stop the pumps. They could require people to stop pumping groundwater, which is kind of a forward-thinking thought as we face drought these days. They also have these abilities to store water in reservoirs, create reservoirs, build reservoirs. And then they also are supposed to prevent the pollution and contamination of water because that would reduce water supply. So here's the mission of the County Water Agency, and what they're supposed to do is protect and enhance the quantity and quality of the water in the lower Salinas. So I know I'm getting there kind of roundabout, but here's the projects that they built. And the point of these projects was supposedly to push back saltwater intrusion. That's what the point was when they advanced this. It was flood protection and to prevent or kind of push back saltwater intrusion. Remember, this agency was created in 1947. So they have had 68 years to push back saltwater intrusion. And they created Lake San Antonio, Lake Nacimiento, then the CSIP project, and then the Salinas Valley Water Project. So you have to ask the question, have they gotten there? And this is the map of saltwater intrusion, and as you can see, it continues to march inland. As far as the water quality, you can see that there's different scales on both of these graphs. The top one is the water as they catch it at San Antonio and Nacimiento Reservoir, and you can see that the water is essentially clean. The scales, the vertical scales, are different. And as you can see down at the lower Salinas, the water becomes very, very polluted. Have they reduced the pumping of the aquifer? No, they have not. All these projects have not reduced a drop of pumping. And in fact, if you were to look at 2014, it would be they haven't released those numbers yet, but everybody anticipates that those numbers will be very, very high for 2014 and 2015. And this is because of the increase in irrigated ag. New water supply has gone to irrigated ag. So now you've had a presentation from Pure Water Monterey. Half the water goes to groundwater replenishment. Half the water goes to the CSIP project. Why should you believe that that water will push back saltwater intrusion or improve water quality? There has been 67 years of history that says that things will only get worse. In spite of the fact of building new water supply projects, and that's what CSIP and Pure Water Monterey is. I'm not saying that the project is all bad. The piece that goes to groundwater replenishment is good. this piece is bad. The question was asked of it going to tertiary treatment. Just because it goes to tertiary treatment doesn't mean that the nitrates are taken out or that the pesticides are taken out. They're left in. Then that water is blended with salinous river water that is more polluted to actually increase the volume of water, because the tertiary water that comes out is better than agriculture water needed. So they blend it with filthy water that's been disinfected to increase the volume and make it available for agriculture. What makes you think that as soon as that water gets distributed to agriculture, more nitrates and more pesticides won't be added? They will. They just will. The growers maintain that no, they won't. Whoa, I'm just about done. So here's the recommended solution. My recommendation is all the water get treated to groundwater replenishment standards. All the water. If there is complaints and if people start backing out and saying, oh no, the project becomes impossible if we do that, you have control over the WDRs of all these discharges. Because of the court case that we brought, which is being appealed, you have control over the WDRs of the Blanco and Wreck Ditch. You have WDRs of the Salinas Industrial Ponds, CSIP, the Salinas Valley Water Project, and you have WDRs for the sewage treatment or the wastewater treatment plant itself. So you could control these numbers. Growers want cheap water. They don't want to provide the true cost of water. This is my last slide. And that's the true cost of water. They capture the water as clean, drinkable water. They return it as this sewage sludge. I'm not saying to end all agriculture. Agriculture is important. I'm saying put the water back the way you got it. Thank you. Any questions? You guys never ask me any questions.
Well, because you're so clear.
Yeah. I will say that literally this was such an important issue that US EPA came out with a webinar, announcing a webinar, and this came out just yesterday. And it's a webinar, and it's Watershed Academy webcast on implementing low-cost modifications to improve nutrient reductions at wastewater treatment plants. And it basically starts with the fact that this has become a serious national problem, and these sewage treatment plants need to start dealing with taking out the nutrients instead of just leaving them in there where people add more. I've got copies of this for you.
Thank you, Steve.
I do have a question. Mr. Shimek, I asked Mr. Shuto what was coming off the water from, I mean, the source water was from the lettuce washing operations, and he said some organics, like bits of lettuce, and then some inorganics like phosphorus and things like that.
Right.
He didn't mention anything else.
Right. So what you're talking about is the wash water, and I am not aware, Mr. Young, of the source of that wash water. In other words, was the source of that wash water well water or municipal water where, and then it gets polluted by the washing materials, by the washing process itself? I doubt very much that they're using raw water, Salinas River water, to wash the lettuce. I don't know really the direct answer. It appears Mr. Harris does.
He's leaning forward. I was just going to say we are aware of the nutrient aspects of the water coming out of the wastewater treatment plant. They do not have nitrification, denitrification on their system. That is something we are looking at. As you, I think we have discussed before, moving forward, that is now kind of a standard requirement that we're requiring of all modifications in new plants. So Morro Bay will have that. Cayucas will have that. and any future modifications to any other projects, it kind of goes along with the almost mandate or soon to be mandate, I think, of recycling wastewater for potable use. So we are aware of the issue and we're looking into it.
Well, so that if there's nutrients in the water that's then going to be applied to ag, do we have a nutrient TMDL for that receiving water body?
It's not going into a water body. It's
no,
going on
the fields.
No, it's
going to land, right.
Well, we're not doing a TMDL for the lands. What we are trying to do through our ag program is account for all of the nutrients that are being applied to agricultural lands that might further degrade groundwater quality. And this is a topic that we will be bringing to you in the coming months. We are in the second round right now of growers reporting their nutrient use. We wanted to get two solid rounds of reporting in before we came to you with some of the results. So there's a lot going on in the background that I'm not really comfortable discussing with you today, but Mr. Young, you'll have to trust me that I have my eye on that ball, and the staff are working on that, and you'll hear more about it in the future.
Can you give me a sense for whether the amount of nutrients is no different than some of the levels of nutrients we see in some of the well water that's being used in ag?
The water coming off of the...
The water that's going to be used...
In CSIP?
Yes.
No, I mean, the water we're seeing, I mean, some of the wells, you know, there's 600, we've had some wells like 650 milligrams per liter. I think what we're looking at in terms of what's coming off of, out of the wastewater treatment plant, there's two components. There's nitrates, but there's also a lot of ammonia, which gets converted to nitrates when it hits the soil. So that's where you get the nitrification, denitrification. You also take care of the ammonia. So it's less than 100. It varies over time too, because their source water is a mix and it changes over time. So it's not a steady state kind of number.
Mr. Shimmick, I don't want to be confused. You're opposed to the 4,500 acre feet going to ag, correct?
So I'm not opposed to the volume of water going to ag. I'm opposed to the treatment standard that water has to go through. In other words, I believe that I don't want to get caught up into who gets what water and how much. That's not my issue. My issue is the pollution level that water represents. And if that water is simply treated in a way that the nutrients, the nitrates are not taken out and the pesticides are not taken out, and then that water is distributed back out onto the fields where the growers then add more, and this is in spite of what they say. They said, oh, no, we account for it all. But then the surface waters wouldn't be polluted like they are. They just don't. So the water goes out to these growers. They add even more chemicals, and you get caught up in this vicious cycle of okay, we just treated the water, but we didn't take out the harmful chemicals. More harmful chemicals get put back in. And then so I don't understand what you're calling treatment if you leave the chemicals that are most harmful to the environment and to people's health if you leave those chemicals in.
Okay, I thought you made the point that seaside intrusion is not going to benefit by giving 4,500 acre feet from this project to ag.
I think that, so I do believe that, but again, so yes, you are correct in that statement. What I am saying
let me ask my follow-up.
Okay, thank you.
If 4,500 acre feet come out of this pure Monterey Bay and go to ag.
Yes.
I would think that would reduce pumping that ag would have to do if they were to pull that 4,500 feet out of the ground because they weren't getting it from pure Monterey Bay, pure Monterey water. So are you suggesting that it's not going to help because they're just going to pump even more water besides getting this 4,500, so really it's not going to affect seawater intrusion?
No, that's not what I'm saying. So what I'm saying is that so far, all the supply projects that have been created, the dams, CSIP, Salinas Valley Water Project, have not beaten back saltwater intrusion, but have in fact fueled more intensive irrigated agriculture. So if you now provide 4,500 more acre feet of water, do you, I guess history, what I'm saying is that history would tell us that what's going to happen is that you'll end up with more irrigated ag, creating more of a problem, and you won't ever reduce the amount of pumping because irrigated ag just gets bigger and more water intensive.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, did I get that? Okay,
yeah. Good.
One thing I want to point out is water that is used on edible crops, the quality of that water is governed by regulations developed by what is now the Division of Drinking Water. If Mr. Shimmick has concerns about that quality of the water, he should be discussing this with the State Board and the State Board's Division of Water Quality. If he thinks that those regulations are deficient or don't cover constituents that he has concerns about.
I hear that. I guess my answer to that is you guys govern the WDRs, the waste discharge requirements for each one of these projects. It is your issue.
But we do not, but we follow the regulations that are established by the Division of Drinking Water for tertiary treated water that's used on edible crops.
Okay, so, Mr. Johnston.
Yeah, I just have one brief comment. I don't quite get some of the arguments you're making, frankly, that if there is more water available in the Castroville area, that there will be suddenly more irrigated agriculture. Last I checked, there was a limited amount of land there, and most of it was planted.
Right.
That's the first thing. The second thing, you were flipping through those slides pretty fast. I realized you were under a time deadline. But it sure looked to me like the slides you were using to argue that agriculture had expanded and expanded and expanded were slides that were citing the dollar value of crops harvested from the 1930s till now in the Salinas Valley, I'm guessing in unadjusted dollars. And, of course, the bars go up and up and up, but that doesn't really have much to do with how many acres of land were being planted.
Right. So I could have used, there is another slide available that I'd be happy to provide you. I did not include it because it doesn't have as much detail, but it is actually a slide that was done from a researcher in the late 90s, early 2000s, as I recall, that basically is the number of irrigated acres. And so that slide is available. I'd be happy to provide that to you. And it is essentially mirrors that exact same graph. So
I apologize. It just strikes me as I don't quite get how if you provide more water for injection in Castroville to keep back seawater, that won't have that won't have any effect on keeping back seawater. But
so, again, I don't want to get caught up in the supply side of the issue. My concern is the pollutants that are in the water and that you just keep – you get caught in a vicious cycle, whether that volume of water is being – pushing back seawater intrusion or not, you're still dealing with a volume of water that just keeps getting more polluted.
Thank you, Mr. Schimmer.
Thank you.
The next speaker card is Mr. Kurt Schmidt. 3 minutes, please. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Kurt Schmidt, Executive Director of the Preservation Inc. I've appeared before all of you before. I will address the matter before you and resist the temptation to address Mr. Shimmick. I think the Pure Water proposal is technically a very interesting and remarkable proposal in that it adds water to both for domestic use on the peninsula and for agriculture. It will assist in the reducing of saltwater intrusion. However, on behalf of Preservation Inc., we monitor the groundwater, the service water at seven locations in the lower Salinas Valley. There will be one side effect that will be apparent after this is implemented, if it is implemented, and that is they're proposing taking water out at two locations, and I'm not addressing the Blanco drain, but just the Tembladero location and the rec ditch at Davis Road. They're proposing taking water out of the system at two locations, which will reduce the total amount of flow, except during the summer when the flow is very low. The results that you will see as a because of this is that TDS, which is a proxy for salt, and nitrate concentrations in the CSIP area will increase in those months that they're taking water out because there will be less dilution from water coming down from the rectage above the pump plants that they have established. This would occur even if there was no future agriculture in the CSIP area because the tile drains reflect what is in the perched water below the farmland, and the levels of nitrates and TDS increases when the farmland is fallow. So it will make it very difficult for the growers in the CSIP area to meet the nitrate and eventual salt standards in your TMDLs, because even if they stop farming, this is going to come out of their tile drains. And if you look at the proposed water use in the appendix to Pure Water, their scaled flow at Castroville would result in what is now basically a summertime flow for 6 months of the year instead of current 2 months of the year. So this will increase the concentration of those two impaired issues. Thank you very much.
Kurt, can I ask him a brief question? Kurt, was that all addressed in the EIR, that subject of increased concentrates of TDS?
No, the EIR was kind of interesting in that various things weren't addressed in the EIR. For example, the EIR ends at the harbor at Moss Landing, and it didn't address the consequences to Elkhorn Slough. The EIR really didn't address the consequences of reduced flow in Tembladero and the rec ditch below the, or in Tembladero, because that's what it's called at that point, below where they're taking water out. I think it's a minor issue. I only think it's something that you should be aware of, particularly when we do get back to addressing the ag order, because it will impact the ability of the growers in that area to comply with the TMDLs.
Will it affect the quality of the water enough going to their crops that it'll affect their crop yield?
No, if this is the water that is coming, that is in the ditches, that is going out through the South Harbor, right, and it's not related at all to what is applied to their crops. And indeed, what is applied to their crops is, as you've already heard, regulated, and the nitrate and salt standards are low enough that it won't impact the crops, and in part because they're diluted by the Salinas River water, not not impaired by the Salinas River water.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. And the last speaker card for this topic is Abby.
Hi, Abby Taylor Silva, Grower Shipper Association of Central California. I just wanted to make a couple of comments on CSIP and on agriculture's use of water as it relates to the discussion that's been had here. When we talk about seawater intrusion in the Castroville area, that began in the early 1940s, and it was due to a number of factors. And that, about 25 years ago, agriculture took the lead and funded a program and a system called CSIP, which I know you're all aware of, that delivers treated water back into 12,000 plus acres in the Castroville area. This has been a widely recognized project for its what it's been doing to push back seawater intrusion. You've heard that seawater intrusion is still happening, and that's totally accurate. In 2013, however, we didn't see any more pull into the area. And when we're talking about pull, we're talking 180 and 400 aquifer, and it's pulling towards the city of Salinas. And why is it pulling towards the city of Salinas? Where I live and love, it is because there is a cone of depression on the east side, and that's due a lot to urban influence. And so I think when we talk about seawater intrusion. We just need to look at it kind of from a full perspective and not look at agriculture specifically. And I also just want to make mention of those 12,000 acres, agriculture knew that there was a problem. They knew they needed to do something. They funded it. They also put other BMPs on that ground, which we've done valley-wide. And I've mentioned the statistic before, but I will once more. In 1993, 25,000 of about 170,000 irrigated acres in Monterey County were on drip. Today, we have 180,000 irrigated acres and 120,000 are on drip irrigation. Drip has been installed throughout the valley, and while it's not a panacea, you know, it's not, you can't always use drip, it's an incredible BMP that has totally reduced the amount of water that's being used. So I just wanted to give you a kind of a more full perspective on all of that. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Abby. So this concludes item 16.